This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thank you so much for joining us again. It's great to have you here. I'm going to start out with some environmentalist talk, and I'm going to go all the way down to Melbourne, Australia. Why am I going? Well, not literally, but I'm going to verbally go down to Melbourne, Australia for this particular set of cuts, because I just find this amazing. You know how the left is always using kids to advance their cause? A few weeks back, CNN went to this elementary school on the East Coast to ask third graders what they thought of Donald Trump and his policies. We had those choirs of kids that they trotted out during the early Barack Obama years where they would sing, "We're going to change. Barack Obama's going to change it." I don't remember all the lyrics, but you remember all that. Barack Hussein Obama. We had all that stuff. Now we have kids being brought into the fray in order to push climate change alarmism. This is via Climate Depot. An 11-year-old, some say 11, some say 12. He's about 12 years old. A 12-year-old boy by the name of Mason Dwyer, cute as a button if you watch the video of him, was named Junior Lord Mayor of Melbourne for 2016. And on July 9th, he spoke to the EcoCity World Summit in Melbourne, Australia, the same summit that former Vice President Al Gore addressed. So Al Gore and 12-year-old Mason Dwyer sharing a stage at different times with the same purpose, to push climate change alarmism. Listen to cut one.
Clean and green. That is my dream. Hello and welcome. My name is Mason Dwyer and I'm the Junior Lord Mayor of Melbourne for 2016-17. I was elected for this role because of my application, which focused on the environment and the challenges we face. At the time, I was an environmental leader of my primary school, and climate change was a continuous subject. From a young age, I've wanted to make a difference. I've wanted to do something great. I had many hopes and dreams for the future. One of them is being in a world in which our natural resources aren't being wasted, but are instead reused, recycled, and saved. Climate change concerns me heavily, and it's hard to ignore that it's happening. If we don't do something now, we'll see our world deteriorate in terms of wonder, beauty, and purpose.
Okay, he's 12 years old. This kid is being used as a pawn. I'm sorry. He's not a scientist. Obviously, he is just taking at face value whatever the adults in his life are feeding to him. Nothing wrong with loving the environment and wanting a clean environment and going against people who litter and wanting to have clean air and clean water. We all want that. But this kid is being used as a propaganda tool. And it's really sad for me to see because he doesn't know what's going on. He's 12. And he continues. This is cut two.
If I somehow manage to accomplish such an important role, such as the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, I would ensure that this was a goal I'd strive to achieve. Rubbish and air pollution changes our climate and environment, affecting us negatively. Being the Lord Mayor, I would do all in my power to reduce waste, to give our environment a chance to regain what we have lost. Because sometimes we need to clear the path to let the environment breathe. Without expanding population, the result is a huge environmental impact. So, we need to be more mindful, clever, creative, and innovative.
Okay, first of all, how many 12-year-olds do you know who worry about expanding population and making sure that the environment can breathe? He's 12. I know I keep saying that. But I just don't understand why I know why. It's because probably his parents are big-time Al Gore fans and climate change alarmists themselves. But once again, when you're losing the argument, when you're losing the debate with the adults, when you're losing the debate with other scientists, when you're not seeing things go your way politically, when you see President Trump, for example, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, that has to drive people like Al Gore absolutely crazy. So now we've got to get the kids involved. Why not? I mean, why not? It's fair game. Make sure that the kids are involved. This is just what they do. So let's turn to Mark Morano of Climate Depot. He did an interview with Sky News in Australia, and he was talking about some of the junk science that's been going on and some of the junk statistics that have been pushed related to the consensus on global warming. Listen to Cut 3.
There was a survey of the American Meteorological Society a few years back of the U.S. meteorologists, and up to 75% were skeptical of global warming. Now, what happens is in the film, we actually go directly after the Australian John Cook. We feature Richard Toll, the lead United Nations author of the climate report, actually comes out and says the 97% figure was quite literally pulled from thin air. And he says it just crumbles when you touch it.
Now, he's talking about Climate Hustle, which is his movie. He's down under trying to talk about his movie and promote his movie. What is he talking about there? 97% of scientists are on board with climate change alarmism. This is the statistics that's thrown around. And now you hear him talking about what they reveal in the movie when they interview important people who know what they're talking about, saying 97%. It's not 97%. We're just kind of pulling that out of a hat. That's why people don't go along with this whole very nakedly political agenda. What about the polar bears? This is the final thing that he talks about. Listen to this. This is Cut 4.
We're up over 30,000 polar bears. You go back before they had a hunting ban on polar bears, three to five decades ago, 4,000 to 5,000 bears were the estimates. Now we're over excess of 30,000. And this is just one of the things, you know, you think how, and they'll come out and say, it's worse than we thought. You'll say, how is it worse than we thought? Polar bear numbers are through the roof. Sea level's not accelerating. The Arctic ice was similar temperatures and similar ice back in the 1930s up into the 40s. How is it worse than we thought now with Antarctic ice now expanding according to study? And they'll say the predictions of the future are worse. So the current data fails to alarm. So they ratchet up scary predictions of 50 to 100 years and say it's worse than we thought. That's what they're getting away with.
Yeah, well, trot out a cute kid and maybe you can bring over a few new converts. Because when people become informed on all the lies that we've been fed, they get off the climate change alarmism train. And I'm really glad that we can think about these things and look at some of the data and look at some of the statistics and see it for what it really is. Now, where does this come into play? For example, when they were talking about Arctic ice, this was interesting. A few weeks back, there's been some stuff in the news about ice breaking off in Antarctica. There was a very interesting piece in The Guardian, which is a very liberal paper in the UK, by a professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, Helen Amanda Fricker. And she writes this piece. The headline on it is Melting and Cracking. Is Antarctica falling apart? Although fracturing and surface melting on the Larsen Sea ice shelf might sound like indicators of climate change, these processes are natural. She's admitting this, and it comes out in the course of this article that she's all on board with the climate change thing. But she says, yeah, it's not really due to climate change. She says glaciologists are not alarmed about most of the processes in Antarctica. They're examples of Antarctica simply doing what we know that Antarctica has done for thousands of years. But because there's a potential link between the ice sheet and climate change, glaciologists are suddenly faced with a situation where the spotlight is on our science on a seemingly daily basis. And every time a crack grows or a melt stream forms, it becomes news. And the situation is a conundrum. We want people to be aware of Antarctica and concerned about what might happen there in the near future as climate changes, but hyping research results to sound like climate change when they are just improved understanding of natural behavior is misleading. An honest woman. I love it. The truth matters, doesn't it? This is applicable in all spheres of life. The truth matters. Facts matter. It's not about emotions. It's not about alarmism. It's about truth. And I love it when people will admit the truth, even if it goes against their preconceived notions of what they prefer the truth to be. By the way, I want to thank all of you who have been donating and calling 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229. We are about halfway toward our goal now of saving 300 preborn babies' lives this summer. We need you. Your gift of $140 provides 5 free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies who need to choose life, and they will go into a crisis pregnancy center. Not only will they get a free ultrasound and choose life, 80% of them do, but they also get the chance to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ through the great ministry, Preborn. So we invite you to call now. Your gift of any amount is a huge blessing. We need you. 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or there's a banner to click on my website, janetmefford.com. Your love saves a life is what it says. You can find it there. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
Though there's much more work to be done, the Trump administration has been receptive to our efforts for more focused attention on religious freedom internationally and especially the tragic situation for Christians around the world. The appointment of Christina Arriaga as Vice Chair to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom is an encouraging development. Christina Arriaga was the Executive Director of the Beckett Fund for Religious Freedom and a great friend to Concerned Women for America. We worked with her and Beckett on many religious liberty landmark cases, including Hosanna Tabor and the Hobby Lobby cases. Her commitment to the protection of religious liberty for all is unquestionable, and we applaud the Trump administration for her appointment.
Protect your First Amendment rights. Speak out and tell President Trump how important religious liberty is to you and your family. Sign this powerful petition today at CapitolHillBrief.org. Again, that's CapitolHillBrief.org. Isn't that a beautiful sound? That sonogram holds the sound of a baby's heartbeat. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and I'd like to introduce you to the Ministry of Preborn. Preborn's mission is to provide free ultrasounds for young moms in pregnancy centers all around America for free, and they need your help. You can help Preborn save precious lives by sponsoring ultrasounds. Ultrasound is a game changer. By letting a mom hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes to saving babies. You can save a baby's life right here in America by donating to Preborn. Join Janet Mefford today, and let's save 300 babies this summer. Will you help us? 855-601-BABY is the number to call, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Please call 855-601-2229. That's 855-601-BABY. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Just a few weeks ago, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis postponed allowing transgender military enlistments for 6 more months, all in the name of having more time to review the matter. But did you know that our troops are still having to go through mandatory Tier 3 transgender training? Meantime, Missouri Representative Vicki Hartzler has filed a proposed amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that would bar the military from providing gender transition surgeries to troops. So we're going to get some thoughts on this whole situation now from the Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council, retired Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force, which he later commanded. And it's so good to have you back here, General Boykin. How are you?
I'm doing well, and it's good to be on your program again.
Thank you so much. So what do you think about where things are headed on this issue in the military right now? It is a good thing that another 6 months has been put into place and they're going to consider it more. But in light of the fact that they're training the troops on transgender issues, how do you see this playing out as things go along?
Yeah, well, first of all, you need to understand that the Army and the Air Force asked for a year delay, and they only got 6 months. So I think Mattis could have done more on this. And Vicki Hartzler is really, I mean, very courageous in what she's doing here with trying to push through a number of amendments. It's not just one amendment. She's tried a number of amendments, and what I am most concerned about is that she can't get the support on this issue, and she's kind of taken a beating by some of her fellow Republicans for even offering the amendment, because they feel like it puts them in a difficult position where they don't want to have to go back and face their constituents for not supporting her amendment, but then they don't want to take the heat through social media for supporting it. So I'm disappointed in the weakness of the Republican Party, but this amendment I mean, this this whole idea of recruiting transgenders and then paying for their transition, surgery as well as hormone therapy, is insane at a time when we have a military with so many needs, and sequestration has so devastated the spending in our military that we certainly can't afford to be doing that.
Right, because her numbers, if I'm recalling correctly, were something like over $1 billion over 10 years. And you're right, we don't have money to spare on that. Why wouldn't we use that to shore up military readiness, not on the silly social experimentation and ridiculous waste of taxpayer money?
That's right. I think it was about $1.8 billion is the actual number over a 10-year period. And, you know, you could buy another destroyer for that.
You could. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm really upset, too. When I think back to the Clinton years and when this whole gays in the military thing was discussed with such gusto. And at the time, on the right, on, you know, the Republican Party, there was clear vision on the fact that it should not be the case that the military is used for social experimentation. Now you look where we are in 2017 and you have Republican congressmen who don't want to actually put their jobs or their re-elections on the line to stand up for what is clearly an insane policy. What is the use of them? I mean, here they are talking about, I don't want to get behind it, it might hurt me. Well, should they not have fought harder when Barack Obama was trying to do this in the first place?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. I think you've nailed it, and that's why I say I'm so disappointed in Vicky's colleagues. But I'll tell you, she's standing firm. She's very courageous on this, but she's getting hammered for it. And she's offered a number of amendments, as I said earlier. The first one being to just stop the whole idea of actively recruiting transgender people. Look. First of all, we need to understand that even the medical community has identified that as being a psychological problem.
Yes.
Now, when you can't get in the military for having flat feet or your eyes are a little bit over the line, you can't come in the military for those kinds of things, and that's been a longstanding policy. But you can come in if you're transgender. You know, my son, who wanted to follow in my footsteps, I have three sons, couldn't come in because as a 12-year-old, he was on Adderall for a period of time. He couldn't get in the military. But now think about that. A person that wants to transition to the opposite gender, which is clearly a psychological problem,
right,
can now come in the military. That does not make sense. It's illogical.
Right. The other thing that's so upsetting to read about in the Federalist, they had a whole piece on this, I know you know this, where they were describing what the troops are being told, their training, things that they have to understand, they have to base. I mean, here's the military that has always been in the business of telling soldiers to adjust their behavior. And now what they're doing is they're telling troops, if there's a transgender individual, you just have to put up with it. If there's a transgender individual in your showers, in your barracks, you are the one who has to deal with it. What does that do to the morale of the troops?
Well, I think it destroys the morale of the troops. More importantly, it destroys the integrity of the military units where you have that kind of situation. You know, you do not want a man to come in your bathroom with male genitalia, even though he feels like he's a female. You don't want that.
No.
Nor does
no.
any other woman. It's insane that we would lose sight of the fact that our military's only mission is to win wars. It's not to be a social experiment ground, and we've lost sight of that. The reality is that the Obama administration did not care about winning wars. What they cared about was social experiments in our military that would then impact our entire nation. And you got to change the military to change the nation because it's a bastion of sort of traditional values. And that's what Obama was all about.
Yes. So what happens if 6 months from now they come back and they say, we're going to move forward with recruiting transgender soldiers? They make a lot of this issue on the left about, oh, it's discrimination and there's been no problem. Look at the last year we've had transgender soldiers and they've served successfully. And my question would be, how do you gauge if they've served successfully if one of the biggest problems is the effect that it has on the other troops? I just don't trust that we're going to get all the pertinent information telling us what's going on for the other people around the transgenders.
You're absolutely not going to get the right kind of feedback on that. And yes, it will damage the morale of the troops. There's no question about that. And it will also hurt not only retention of good people, but it will hurt the recruitment of good people. And we're already seeing that based on the other social experiments. And I think that this is going to have a devastating effect. But you put together the amount of time that you're going to spend training on not only this social experiment, but the previous social experiments by the Barack Obama administration, and what you're going to find is you're eating up a lot of precious time that ought to be used preparing for war, and instead it's used for these social experiments. I want to see General Mattis step forward and really grab this one and say, stop this, because during his confirmation hearing, he emphasized readiness. This obviously does not contribute to readiness, not in any way, and in fact, it degrades readiness. So it's time for him to step up, and if he doesn't, then the president needs to override him and do an executive order that puts an end to this.
I agree. I think that that would be the most important thing, and that's part of the question people have as well. What could President Trump do about this?
Well, this whole thing started with a directive from the White House, right? There was no congressional involvement in this. Congress never even addressed this issue. They are now, they're trying to, at least because they're NDAA. So what Mr. Trump could do is he could issue a directive that stops it, just like Obama started it with a directive. And that directive could be in an executive order, or it could just simply be a directive to the Department of Defense. That's what I hope he's going to do. And I will tell you, it's also important to understand that this is not on his radar screen right now. We found out this morning this is not on his radar screen. We've made an issue of this with the White House, and it was not on the president's radar screen. It's got to be on there, and we've got to push hard to get it on there, and that your audience, your listening audience, can be part of that. You know, by passing that message on to the White House, that they want him to take a look at this.
Absolutely. And I'm still going back to what you said about Representative Hartzler and how little support she's getting from her colleagues. What about the pressure that we can put on these lawmakers who represent us across the country to say, get behind this amendment? Is there still time to do that? When do we see a vote here on the NDAA? What's going on currently with the timing?
I think there is still time to do that, but we need to move quickly. And what we need to do is every Republican, you just write the Democrats off in the House of Representatives.
Right.
But every Republican, we need to be hammering them through social media, through calls to their office, through emails, and telling them to support Vicky Hartzler's amendment on this transgender thing. And if we can get that through, it is a huge step forward on this.
Right. And I do really appreciate what she has also proposed. As you mentioned before, she had other amendments. I know she withdrew the one saying that she wanted to give the Pentagon this opportunity to address the problem internally. But I love her fight. I wish we had every single member of Congress just like her. This is what we need.
I'm telling you, this is a representative that is truly doing what her constituents sent her to Washington to do. And she's doing it with boldness and courage.
Yeah, she really is. And we need a whole lot more like her. So I think it is really important for all of us to get with our lawmakers, to let our voices be heard via email or phone calls, whatever it happens to be, and get behind her. This is a very important amendment that needs to be passed. Well, General Jerry Boykin, thanks again, sir, for being with us. Always wonderful to have you here. And we'll be right back on Janet Meffer Today. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com. We are back on Janet Meffer Today. Well, there was a very emotional hearing yesterday in the case of little British baby Charlie Gard. We've been following his case very closely. His mom and dad apparently stormed out of this hearing yesterday after a disagreement with the judge deciding Charlie's fate. There's just a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, but we're going to get an update now and some thoughts from Penny Nan, CEO and president of Concerned Women for America. Penny, great to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be with you again.
So this was apparently very emotional. The mom and dad stormed out. The judge, as I understand it, Penny, misrepresented a quote from the dad about whether or not they wanted Charlie to live in his current condition.
Yes. And, you know, listen, this is so difficult for those parents, right? This is the life and death of their son. And so, you know, you can't blame them for being very upset with the judge. They felt like this was going to be an independent evaluation of his condition. They had a doctor lined up, which a doctor did actually call in and testify on what was happening with Charlie and what the procedure would be and the kind of treatment that he could offer. But the parents were very upset with the way that the judge was discharging his duties, and they let it be known.
Yeah, they did. From what I understand, they said that the judge, Justice Francis, had referred to some previous comments, I guess, that Charlie's father had made, something along the lines that he would not want his son to continue living in his current condition if there wasn't any prospect of improvement. Well, I would have been upset about that, too. The whole thing is about saving his life.
Right. That's right. You know, it's TK2 is the short term for the condition that Charlie has, and not a lot's known. But, you know, listen, all of our great medical treatments were new. You know, all of our recent discoveries, all the recent treatments for breast cancer, and, you know, so much has changed and continues to change because in the United States, we have the ability to try new things and new medicines and new treatments. And, you know, the free market is able to help us with that, and not so much in Great Britain. And so it's not definite. You know, it's perhaps a 10% chance, but Charlie's parents feel very strongly that he's still fighting, and they want a little bit longer, just a little bit longer, and believe that it is up to them and not up to this hospital to make that decision.
No, one of the things that I thought was quite jarring from the evidence, in fact, that was presented was there was apparently, according to reports, a doctor who was testifying who said that the hospital's MRIs on Charlie don't show structural brain damage because apparently there are not these structural definite abnormalities that I guess you would expect if there actually were structural brain damage. Mm-hmm. So if it is the case that he is not permanently brain damaged, that is important new evidence.
It is important. And the thing that makes me think about, Janet, is why are the MRIs lacking in the UK?
Right. yes.
You know?
I do.
And I believe that's because it's single payer. You know, I recently had a situation, you know, not to be too personal, but with my back. And my husband and I commented, I was able to get, you know, an MRI on my back within a day or two. Okay. And we were saying if I were in Great Britain or Canada, it would be months. Right. That I'd be waiting to hear. And so, again, you know, our equipment, our medicine in the United States is cutting edge, and there's reasons for that, and there's good reasons for that. And so it's not surprising that Charlie's parents want to come take advantage, and we welcome them to do that because every life is precious. And if they want a little bit longer, they want to try one more thing to see if they can help their son, then I think it's cruel. It's cruel not to allow them to do that.
Yeah, and for a lot of pro-lifers here in America, Penny, maybe you can shed some light on this. they look at this case and say, fine, you're single payer over there in the UK, and mm-hmm. you don't want to have to pay for the costs right. of keeping a baby on a ventilator, I'm sure, enormous.
Yeah.
However, if the parents are saying, can you just give us our child back and we'll go elsewhere, right. what is going on that the hospital would not release the child to his parents? They would not be responsible for Charlie's care anymore. Why wouldn't they be willing to do that?
Well, you know, they are presuming to have knowledge and understanding that his parents don't have. They are presuming that the judge is presuming that the person or the entity that is best set up to make decisions for Charlie is this hospital that doesn't know him really. I mean, you know, they've treated him, but they're not his relatives. That somehow they know better than Charlie's parents.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's just outrageous that you, and all of us are like, you know, yes, we understand single payer at some point there's a limit, but that these parents have raised $1.7 million on their own right. to care for this child. They have the ability to do that, and they very much have worked with the United States and are working, and Italy, by the way, because the Vatican's been involved in this.
Right.
And there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes work on there that I can't really even disclose. But there has been a lot of effort on this child's part, and we just want to see the government in its right place. And we strongly believe that the parental rights should remain intact, and that government should not be usurping parental rights in this case.
Absolutely, because even if you had, for example, a terminal cancer case, for example, mm-hmm. you know, and you had somebody who was in the last stages of cancer, if the family said, I would like to take mom home to die, mom wants to die at home in her bed, right. she's going to die anyway, can I just take her home? As far as I know, that would be usually permissible. She's terminally ill, right. you know, whatever. So if they believe he's not going to get better, he's going to die, couldn't they get around that by saying, can we just have him to take him home to die and then take him right. to the U.S.? I don't know.
Well, I think that's what they're afraid of.
Yeah.
That the parents will be like, yeah. okay, we're taking him, and they'll jump on Trump's jet or something.
Right.
You know,
or they probably will.
Maybe.
Good idea.
That would be awesome. I would applaud that.
Yeah, I think he would do it, too.
Yeah, I do, too. But that is what they're afraid of. But they're saying, no, he has to die, and he has to die here. Mm-hmm. And again, I think, you know, every member of the UK, every citizen should take a hard look at that and understand how this is government gone amok, and how far this government has gone to usurp parental rights.
That's right. Yeah. And we do have similar situations like that. I know I've done interviews in the past about the situation mm-hmm. where I am in the state of Texas, if you can believe it. And there have been some incidents in Texas where they have some pretty stringent laws on if they determine that the patient is not going to get better, then they can override mm-hmm. the family's wishes and that sort of thing. That's terrifying to me, Penny, because you should mm-hmm. not feel like when you go to a hospital, you might face an impossible situation where you're doing battle with the hospital. Clearly, it's worse in the UK. But yeah. you're right. As we're looking at Obamacare, well, that is a fear to be examined, isn't it?
Well, the issue of rationing is a real one. And as a pro-lifer, I believe that life begins at conception, and we need to protect life from conception to natural death. And yes, there's, you know, certainly lines that can be drawn where you're making Herculean efforts for people who are absolutely terminal. And at some point, you know, the family decides when it's time to let them go. Yeah. And those decisions naturally are made, I think, pretty effectively in consultation with with the family and with the doctors. But when you have the government getting in between the family and the doctor, then, you know, you've got some very serious issues. And it's something we should be concerned about, because the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is 15 unelected bureaucrats who yeah. don't, they can't say you can't treat this person, but they can say what the cost is and then say that the hospital will never get reimbursed, or the
right.
doctors.
Right.
So in effect, yeah, they have a lot of power. And the problem with that is that they're unelected bureaucrats. They're not anyone who's really accountable to anyone. And so we are working to get that repealed as part of Obamacare, because we have deep concerns about that. But one little thing, Jen, I wanted to add is, normally when a parent, it happens, right? There are bad parents out there.
Yes.
And the government sometimes does have to step in and terminate parental rights. But it's not, in these kind of cases, if it has to do with care, it usually has to do with lack of care.
True.
And neglect. It's
right.
not because the parents are too involved, right?
Yes.
And so, again, this whole thing is so backwards and so difficult. And you see these pictures of this sweet baby. Ultimately, his life is in God's hands, and we need to pray for that. But we are just really hoping and urging the UK to reconsider, the courts to reconsider, and give the parents rights.
Absolutely. We're going to go to a very quick break. We'll come back with Penny Nance, CEO and President at Concerned Women for America. Stay with us on Janet Meffer Today.
Do you ever feel like it's your job to hold everything or everyone together? That if you don't act a certain way or do all the right things, other people or your circumstances will just fall apart? This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. Sometimes messages from our past or even from our culture tell us that we have to hold everything together. That somehow we can control how other people feel and respond, or that we can control every detail of our lives. That's a heavy burden that we were never meant to carry. Instead, Jesus tells us that He holds everything together and His burden is light. So if you're feeling stressed and burdened today, ask God to show you what burden you're carrying that's not yours to carry. Allow Him to hold all things and people together in your life. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeanneNigro.com. That's jeanneNigro.com.
Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save 300 babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, "I just can't allow this baby to be killed," were her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. We're talking with my friend Penny Nance, CEO and President at Concerned Women for America. Check them out at CapitolHillBrief.org, a wonderful site, a wonderful feature that you hear every day. Penny, we've been talking about this very heartbreaking and difficult case involving this little British baby, Charlie Gard. There was a hearing yesterday again with the parents. There was some significant evidence, as reports have been indicating, that there is good evidence that they probably should move in the direction of allowing him to perhaps seek additional treatment and see if it can be, you know, helpful to Charlie. What I find interesting, I don't know if you had a chance to see this. It doesn't matter if you did or didn't, because it kind of pertains to this. But the New York Times, Wesley J. Smith had reported on this over at National Review. There was a piece in the New York Times promoting infanticide, and it was using this piece from this heartbroken couple because they had a child who was sick, and then the child died, and then the father comes to the conclusion, maybe we just should have been allowed, like those who have mercy on a dog, to be able to kill him instead. And these thoughts go through your mind. And I thought, what a worldview difference, isn't it? Here's the New York Times printing something like this at the exact moment that you see the world's attention riveted on the life of this little baby over in Great Britain. It's just astounding to me, the worldview difference.
Well, and that's right. I mean, you know, this school of thought, they've even advocated for afterbirth abortion,
yeah,
is what they've called it.
Awful.
There is a Professor Singer at Princeton,
yes,
who's an advocate of that. And it is, you're right. If you don't see children as made in God's image, and you don't realize that there is the sanctity of life is absolutely essential, because at some point when you see people in utilitarian terms, you end up with horrific consequences.
You do.
And we've seen it throughout history. We have to hold up the mantle for life as believers, as members of Concerned Women for America, as your listeners. This is essential for our civilization.
This is
what sets us aside from others and from dictators, from from Kim Jong-un in North Korea.
It's true.
Life is cheap there. Yeah. It means nothing. If you cross him, you're sent to the concentration camp. And by the way, children are sent there too,
right,
as enemies of the state. And you know, you don't have to go too far to get to that, because if you mean nothing, if life is cheap, if the ends justifies the means, then so what?
I know.
And so, it is very difficult. I mean, people talk about, in the issue of life and in the culture of life, you hear all kinds of arguments, and people basically, suggest that what you're saying is that it's better to kill someone than to allow them to live and allow them their time and allow God to be in control.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I wonder if it's just we're such a culture that wants to avoid all forms of suffering, all forms of sacrifice. Everything should be quick and easy and neatly tied up in a 24-minute pilot over on the TV channel. And, life isn't like that. Life is difficult. We're in a fallen world. We know that sin and sickness and death are part of that world. And it's very, very difficult. But, another thing that I thought was interesting is, Representative Trent Franks, who's such a pro-life hero, has introduced this legislation now that would allow Charlie to become a lawful permanent resident of the United States so he could come here. And I saw leftists just beating him up for this. Oh, you care about this one baby overseas, but you don't care about the 23 million people who will lose their health insurance if you vote against Obamacare. I mean, what about this pushback on the left against legislation that would help save a life? What do you think is driving that?
Well, I mean, they're conflating the idea that somehow you can't be in favor of the free market.
Yeah.
And somehow, understand that the sanctity of life. And we're saying basically we're in deep disagreement with you, because we think if you really do respect life, that we absolutely need to be compassionate. We need to do everything we can possibly do to keep people safe. We want people to have the opportunity for health care. But by creating a single-payer system, you're giving so much power to the government that you end up hurting people, the people that are the sickest,
yes,
the people that are the most elderly.
Right.
Because, why would we do a hip replacement for granny because she's 80? So, let's not do that,
mm-hmm,
right? We don't care. Her life doesn't matter as much. There are honest people and compassionate people, honestly, on both sides of this debate. But I think that it's very important for us to make sure that we are speaking for life and standing firm on the idea that life is precious.
It is.
And we must protect it. We must do everything we can to protect it.
Yeah, we do. Do you think that there is any likelihood that legislation would be of any assistance to Charlie? Do you anticipate that that's not going to be necessary in the best case scenario, that he would be allowed to go with his parents, if things turn out right at the hands of the judge? Would he even need that, I wonder, to become a lawful permanent resident? Because it sure seems like there are a lot of people willing to move heaven and earth to get him here.
Right, right. I think the Trump administration would do whatever they needed to do to allow him into the country. But I think they're just being careful.
Yeah,
I think they mean it. And honestly, it helps Charlie's parents.
True.
When the U.S. Congress is focused on what's happening to their little baby,
right,
it kind of turns up the heat on the court.
It
so,
does. It
you know,
does.
I think it's not pointless. I think it may be, just an effort, more of a PR effort, but it matters.
Penny, what about the situation in the UK as far as the pro-life community? Because you don't hear similar things, at least I haven't heard a whole lot of similar things coming out of Parliament. You would think there would be some people in Parliament who would be fighting really strongly for this baby. I know there are British people who are standing for Charlie, but what about the contrast there that you have the American government making a big deal, but Theresa May, thus far has not been exactly a hero for Charlie?
Yeah, it's really interesting. over the years, I've done some work with the UN, and I know that there is a pro-life presence in the UK. I've met people who are active in that movement, but it's not nearly as built out in the UK or Europe as it is here. I think you have definitely some advocates in Ireland, but much less so in other parts of Europe. And it's a shame because this is why. But, you know, my prayer is this will be an awakening for them, that this will be a time for them to come together as a nation and reexamine their priorities and reexamine their system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be great. That would be great. If there's that much attention from the pro-life community over here, it can only bolster, hopefully, and help. Because this is the thing, Penny. Today it's Charlie Gard. Tomorrow it could be another baby. It could be an elderly person. That's the thing. We always seem to be fighting the culture of death. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are, because I know CWA is so wonderful in fighting for the lives of all people who are created in the image of God. Where do you see the trend going? More in the direction of protecting life? Or do you think we're, with the whole single payer and socialized medicine thing, losing ground? Where do you see the battle heading right now in terms of momentum?
Well, I think right now we are definitely fighting to keep our footing, because I think we're winning on abortion, by the way.
Right.
I think that the tide has turned on that issue, and that's why no one even cares that Planned Parenthood's funding is getting shifted to community health centers.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even a thing. Nobody's even concerned about that in the Senate or House bill. They get the importance of that. But where we're having to really fight is physician-assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And state by state, that is becoming a real issue in the District of Columbia, where, you know, where CWA is headquarters.
Right.
It is, although we care as a country, I think, more about the unborn, I think sonograms have helped, I think we care less about our elderly and our very sick.
Yes.
And we have to be just as vigilant about those lives as we are about babies.
It is
essential that we protect every life.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I know at some point, Penny, we should do a show, just do our next hit on this issue about death with dignity, that lie that is perpetrated in the quest to try to attack life at the end of life. Because you're right, that is the next frontier. We've had groups like Compassion and Choices, the former Hemlock Society, doing all it can to convince people that this is the route. This is not the route. And I think the Charlie Gard case points that out more than ever.
The good news is people are starting to write about just the lie of the compassion of the gas chamber, as they've called it.
Oh, that's so terrible. Yep. Well, so, Penny, thank you so much. Check out CapitolHillBrief.org. Penny Nance from Concerned Women for America. We just really appreciate you, Penny. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless you, too. Thanks for listening to Janet Mefford today, and we'll see you next time. God bless you.